Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Pitch on the way. And that is drilled deep to left field. And you can kiss it goodbye. Into the Landry's Crawford boxes. Alex Bregman goes yard. And the Astros go up 2-1.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Did you like Alex Bregman and Juan Soto carrying their bats to first base? We put a spot up on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, where you can answer, let us know. People get so crazy over bat flips. That was Steve Sparks with the call on the Astros radio network. Really cool to be able to get the perspective of a guy who's pitched in the big leagues and now is inside the ballpark as a member of the Astros radio team. Steve Sparks and Robert Ford keep me company on many nights during the summer when I listen to them on the broadcast. And Steve, it's great to have you on the show now to get your perspective on this game six. Certainly going to be remembered as the Steven Strasburg game, especially if the Nationals win the World Series. But as a former pitcher, what did you see from Strasburg that impressed you the most?
You know what? Anytime somebody gives up a run or two in the first innings, able to calm the storm, that's kind of the trait of some of the best pitchers we've ever seen, right? But Strasburg, to win five times in the postseason now, there's a reason for it, man. He showed a lot of heart, a lot of character, a lot of gut. And he was tough. He was economical when he needed to be to get late into the ball game. So 8 1/3 out of your pitcher in game six to leave it to the, you know, all hands on deck mentality in game seven was huge for the Nationals.
I can only imagine listening to it, watching it on TV. Certainly you can gauge some of the wild range of emotions, but being there in the park, what's it like as you've got the runs again scored in the first inning, and then you've got runners on base against Verlander, but in the fifth, a couple of home runs that put the Nationals in front. Then, of course, the crazy seventh. I mean, what was it like inside the park?
Well, it was crazy, and it was crazy at Nationals Park in D.C. as well. I mean, they just never were able to get that big hit when they really needed to get that crowd to explode, and that's the key to winning these games on the road the way everybody's done in the first six games of this series. That's a record, by the way. they've taken the crowds out of it by getting leads, and it's funny that the last five games and the last three innings of each of these last five games that the home team has not even been able to get the tying run to the plate in any of them. So it's been a bizarre World Series in that fashion. And the Astros, who have home field advantage by having the best record in baseball this year, are hoping finally game seven that it pays off with a win at Minute Maid Park.
Gosh. It certainly, to this point, has been the complete opposite, right, of what we expected.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander has this incredible accomplishment of having started seven World Series games. There are a lot of pitchers in baseball that would take that, even with the dubious record that he has. Is there something that you can pinpoint that you've seen with him this series or these playoffs that might not quite be Justin Verlander-like?
Well, it's a very fair question. And the one thing that I can pinpoint is the amount of run support he's gotten in all seven of the World Series games he's pitched, and that his team has never given him more than two runs of support while he's in the game in any single one of them. So you think about that, Amy, it's more or less the type of game, and they're such crucial high-intensity games, but you're never able to really go after any hitter because any mistake in a game like that when it's tight, if your team hasn't scored – every pitch is vital, so he has to pitch to the corners at the first of a bat. So if he falls behind, then he doesn't want to, give in. So he pushes eject and goes to the next hitter. So it's a very tough way to pitch, especially with the World Series pressure that's involved. But I just think he's needed a cushion along the way at some point. He's just never gotten it.
Steve Sparks is one half of the Astros radio team, along with Robert Ford, and he's here with us following Game 6. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So let's talk about that strange seventh inning with the interference call. I thought it was interesting what John Smoltz had to say about how, as a pitcher, when you make that throw to first, you're taught to aim at the runner because you never know if there might be an interference call. What did you see?
Well, when it's a play down the first baseline, what I was always taught that you would aim at the runner. The play down the third baseline where Peacock grabbed that, he had a clear lane toward the first baseman. So I wouldn't think about throwing it toward the hitter at all in that instance. But the throw kind of ran on him because he threw it sidearm, so it tailed a little bit toward the line. And I've always felt like that play always penalizes the right-handed batter. From where he starts in the right-handed batter's box to run straight line to first base, he's going to be inside that line most of the way to the bag. So it's almost a no-win situation. I think that for some way that's got to change, whether it's the double bag where you keep part of the bag in foul territory or whatever, but I think that's got to change. And maybe happening on the biggest stage of baseball, they'll finally do something about it. But I've always hated that rule. It was a catchable throw. They said, you know, that's not a reviewable play. It was a rules consultation is what that was. And that's why they spent 4.5 minutes on the headsets back to New York. So just making sure everybody was right about that. I think it's a ticky-tack play. I don't like it. The fact that Gurriel's glove flew off, I think, made the play go in the Astros' direction. All I have to say is, you know, as a not-so-impartial observer, I hated to see something controversial happen at that point, you know, and you see the two on Homer right after that, and you're thinking, well, all right, maybe that's just the way that's the way it should have happened. But, you know, there's a soft landing for the Astros. You get Game 7, you get another crack at it at Minute Maid Park, where they won 65 times this year when you include the playoffs, and they'll take that any day.
So you mentioned the delay, and it was weird because we all assume it was for review, but as you point out, it's a non-reviewable play, and then people are just standing around kind of waiting, including Will Harris, who then gives up the home run to Anthony Rendon. As a pitcher, does that kind of a delay affect you at all?
Maybe a young pitcher, Amy, you know, but Will's been around the league, and I listened to his interview talking about it. He said it didn't bother him, and he's never going to make an excuse, but I tend to believe that it didn't bother him. You know, he said he just didn't execute the pitch where he wanted to. He didn't have a call go his way on the previous pitch, and he overcorrected a pitch. The leader in RBIs in all major leagues, Anthony Rendon, happened to put a good swing on. So,
right.
I think it was more of execution rather than the long layoff.
Steve Sparks is a former knuckleballer in his playing days in the major leagues, now part of the Astros radio team. He's with us here After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So a bit of a walk down memory lane, Steve. What do you remember about Game 7 in Los Angeles just a couple of years ago?
Well, I remember going into the clubhouse probably an hour and a half before the game started. And for all I was really wanting to do was just check out the mood so I could relay maybe a little bit on what I observed, you know, with the team, and if they felt like that team was loose or tense. And all I remember is the radio blaring and guys are laughing and singing to like 70s disco music, something ridiculous. The George Springer's usually in charge of the music in the clubhouse. But I to myself, in my mind, I thought, you know what? These guys are ready to play. They're loose. They felt very confident. This team typically plays very well with their backs against the wall. And we saw that in D.C. in games 3, 4, and 5. And for whatever reason, I feel like they play their best baseball. And I think their manager, A.J. Hinch, does a great job of putting players in a position where they can do what they do at their highest level at just the right times. I think he's done a great job with that. So I think they'll give themselves a great chance to win tomorrow night. I feel pretty confident that Zach Greinke will execute, and that's what they pride themselves on, is executing to their game plan, good pitches. And then, you know, you've got Jose Urquidy. You probably have Garrett Cole at your disposal, along with the rest of their late-inning relievers, to try to lock down their second World Series in 3 years.
You obviously had that Game 7 in Los Angeles, so it wasn't in Houston.
Right.
What do you expect it to be like at Minute Maid Park on Wednesday?
Well, I expect it to be like it was tonight. We really felt it. I mean, there's times when good things are happening. Alex Bregman hits the home run in the first inning tonight to give the Astros the lead. And you can feel it in our booth even. You can feel the vibration on our desktop. and that's the way it is. You know, that roof is closed. It was raining outside. It looked like we were just in a dungeon in there. And it was going to be a battle royale. And that's what it felt like in the first inning where both teams traded punches. But it's the cardinal sin in baseball. And Jim Leland said this forever. The cardinal sin in baseball is not to add on. And when it comes to World Series time, if you don't add on, usually it catches up with you.
Speaking of adding on, it's almost happened right before our eyes that now a standard playoff game is easily 3.5 hours and much closer to 4 in some cases. I'm not really sure how to process that other than it just seems like the norm now, Steve, and it's changed right before our eyes.
Well, whenever you get into the postseason, we can certainly feel it on our radio broadcast. There's more time in between innings.
Yeah.
So they get more commercials in there. Radio and television alike, and they're just going to stretch the dollars as much as they can. I like a quicker pace game, but you know, you notice this, and I remember, you know, I was teammates with Randy Johnson, some of the better pitchers that I noticed. You know, when things become very tense, they take their time just a little bit more in between pitches because, you know, the wheels are turning. They're making sure that things are going to be executed in proper fashion to get the best results. And that's what we're seeing. You know, we see obviously a ton of pitching changes. I thought this World Series, you know, when we saw things the way they were going to be stacked up, that you had such great pitchers like Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, and then the Astros top three with Cole Verlander and Greinke, that it was going to be kind of an old-fashioned World Series. But we're still seeing bullpens going 4 and 5 innings until we saw Strasburg tonight. You know, the last complete game in a playoff, not just World Series, but in the playoffs, was game 2 of the 17 championship series when Verlander was pitching against the New York Yankees. I'm not sure if we're going to see another one.
Maybe ever, for sure.
Yeah.
Steve, before I let you go, just out of curiosity, because I do play-by-play some myself, do you get nervous at all or feel the tension or the jitters as a broadcaster?
You know, I think I probably do for about 2 or 3 minutes in the first inning. You know, a little bit of it leads up into it. You've played a lot of things in your head. A lot of times I live about 35 minutes from Minute Maid Park. I'm playing through some things in my mind that could happen during the game so I can anticipate. But the biggest thing that I've learned as a broadcaster that I had to learn anyway was to take my time, especially on radio. You don't have to be in perfect time
right.
With a lot of these games. But you be on time with the crack of the bat. Then you pause a little bit and you let it happen and you kind of relay a half a second or a second after the play is done. That way you don't fumble all over your words trying to be in perfect sync. But for me, I do get excited about these games. I interview our manager, AJ Hinch, before every game. And when I went into his office today before the game, I said, "Hey, how are you feeling right now?" This wasn't part of the interview. He said, "You know what? I'm not nervous. I'm just excited. I can't wait to get out there." And that's the way I feel going into a broadcast now. I know I'm prepared. That takes a lot of the nerves out of it.
For sure. And this will be our third Game 7 in the World Series in 4 years. And so we've seen,
how about that?
Yeah, we've seen a couple of these. We're kind of spoiled as sports fans. All right, you can find Steve on Twitter at SteveSparks37, former big league pitcher himself. And he brings that to the broadcast along with Robert Ford and has the chance to call yet another Game 7 in the World Series. Steve, thank you so much for a couple of minutes and have fun on Wednesday night.
I will, Amy. Thanks for having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.